Welcome to another episode of The Gateway. My name is Russ, and as always, I am joined by my co-hosts Amin and Biagio. For this episode, The Gateway is excited to welcome Tyler Otto, an analytics professional with over a decade of experience in data science, ranging from the fintech space to medical aesthetics. He has a bachelor's in mathematics and a master's in analytics from LSU. Tyler, welcome to The Gateway. It is a pleasure to have you here today.
Thanks for having me on.
We are truly excited, as we are with all of our guests. And I say that every single time, but like truly, Tyler, I think you are one of those perfect finds, those perfect gets that we are really excited about because your background, your experiences really align with what we're trying to do here. So I always like to start these conversations at the beginning. So how did you get to where you are? What's your story?
Well, it's a long story. I guess starting from undergrad at LSU,
What's this LSU that you're... I've never heard. That's a good question.
That's a good point. So this is Louisiana State University, located in the heart of Louisiana, in Baton Rouge.
I am never going to be allowed to go to Death Valley again. Okay,
I was definitely struggling with what major to pick. And at the time, this was before data science was even a term. I think it was probably decision science was the real thing back then. I was in actuarial sciences, so trying to study for the actuarial exams and pass those and then make that my career. I passed the P exam and I wanted to start applying for jobs, and it was really competitive. I started studying for the FM exam. And when it came time to start applying for jobs, I just thought to myself, how many more of these exams do I have to take? And it's up to 8 back then. I don't know what it is now. I decided to start to pivot to become a geophysicist in Houston. So I did that for a few years. But I learned that if you put all of your eggs in a basket in one domain in oil and gas, the oil and gas industry tanked in around, this was early 2015. I decided to pivot to analytics. And so I went to the LSU MSA program for a year to get my master's in analytics there. And from there, I've just kind of worked my way up and across different companies from fintech to pharmaceuticals to where I am now. So just kind of working my way up all the way through to where I am.
Wow. And Tyler, do you mind sharing where you're at right now? I just want to make sure.
Yeah, I'm in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. So a bit west of Fort Worth.
Perfect. So again, now it's, what is that, Longhorn? Are those the Texas Longhorns? Is that kind of the thing?
Are you saying like in my backyard or like,
yeah, or like in the area? Like, are those the fans? Like, do you have to deal with them as a LSU grad? Like, I feel bad for you is really what I'm trying to say.
It's not bad because we have TCU not too far away and they are a fellow shade of purple. So we find a little bit of a common ground amongst different schools over here. So it's fun to have lots of different colleges to compete with, especially in the SEC. Not to get too much into football, but we have, you know, A&M now in the SEC. We have UT, and so we got all these different schools that are joining the conference. So that's always fun to have that in our backyard.
Right, perfect. All right, so back to more important things. I think a lot of people 10, 15, 20 years ago went the actuarial education route, and I'm not even saying the full depth of becoming an actuary, but like the elements of it like you did, and now it's data analytics. People are going into that one. Can you give us a little bit more on that transition and where some of those differences are if someone's listening and is pursuing mathematics as their major, you know, kind of going into the more traditional hardline math and then maybe debating going into analytics with a minor? What was that transition and did it fulfill you? Are you glad you did that, or do you wish you kind of stayed going through those tests and those exams?
I'm so happy that I chose analytics. How do I express how happy I am? I On LinkedIn, people will come to me asking specific questions on what they want to achieve, how to get there, and the why behind it. And I don't even think of it as a job, because I know how much analytics has done for me in my life. So it's wow. Just changed me so much that I want to share it with everybody else. I'll answer stuff on Stack Overflow, and it's just enjoyable, right? So it's allowed me to have job security. It's allowed me to have something that I can always learn more. I'm trying to think of any negatives because I don't want to like oversell it, but it really has enriched my life to a point of gratitude, even though I have nothing to no one person or one thing to reciprocate that gratitude. But it really has changed my life.
Wow. That was a great episode. Thanks so much for being here, Tyler. That I'm totally joking. Sometimes there's these moments in them where like someone hits something perfectly and you're like, that was what I think the whole meaning of life was. And you just unlocked that in the first 10 minutes. So congratulations, Tyler, you get an A+ for being a podcast guest. But within that then, so you're now in analytics, you're working in it, you've experienced I would say a wide range of industries that are still utilizing data and analytics and that comprehensive thinking, that critical thinking. Is there something right now that you are missing, or a skill that you wish you would have developed earlier that maybe someone listening could say, oh, I didn't even think about that, that would help? Or are you like, I just continue to get better every day, you know, kind of like a football player?
I guess to answer your first question, if there's anything missing in my skill set today, the answer is 100% absolutely.
Oh, wow.
I've been in analytics-ish for... oh man, I'm going to date myself, over 10 years for sure. So over a decade. And I think the one thing that I've always struggled with is imposter syndrome. I think that I've yet to find the one data scientist unicorn that is an expert, or maybe not even an expert, is a 7 out of 10 in everything. I've not found that person, that can do, I found people that are good at building, you know, forecasting models. I found people that are good at data visualization. I found people that are really good at building stories in just PowerPoint from dashboards and be able to express them in different ways that I never thought was possible from somebody who had a technical skill set. So to answer your question more specifically, I'm being very broad here. I'm calling out imposter syndrome because I find it important to say that whatever imposter syndrome you are feeling is valid, but just know that everybody else is going through it. And then that kind of relieves a little bit of the tension. But I guess the one thing I wish I were better at was like unsupervised learning. It is harder, I feel, to find the applicable project to communicate to stakeholders where unsupervised learning can be useful, but then also get their buy-in. So in the past four or five companies I've been at, I've not found that one moment where unsupervised learning can give me, a project to provide value for anyone at the company. So that's kind of what I've been struggling to get to. But in general, yeah, there's tons of stuff I don't know about still.
Wow, Tyler, I'm completely blown away by all of those things. And I want to touch on a couple of them, especially when we're talking about those skill sets, because I do think it's very easy for us as humans, and especially people going into education, learning, and they're paying a lot of money to get a good degree, to get, you know, the skills they need. It's very easy to start a checklist of everything you need. When you were mentioning visualization compared to forecasting, compared to like those unique skill sets all within the umbrella of analytics, do you have to have a working knowledge of all of those? Let's say maybe a 3 or a 4 on those, or can you be a 0 on visualization, and not like as a human, but like as a skill set, an ability, a 0 on visualization and a 9 on forecasting, and still be a impactful analyst, or would it be better to have someone with fives and fives, but not that higher ceiling within that?
That's a good question. I think it depends on the company you're interviewing for, and this can be tough to find in the interview process, especially if you have, if you're getting like hired on by someone in HR, you're not gonna be able to answer those questions to see if you're a good fit. So you got to get to the second round first before you can answer those questions. So for example, I do side projects on occasion. I have one project where I'm doing, you know, time series forecasting. And I don't think that would have been a useful project or skill set to have when I was in my fintech days. But when I started working in pharmaceuticals, the supply chain team needed a better forecast to help them try and get to, you know, figure out what demand was. And so that was a perfect skill set where I was at that company. So I guess it depends on which company you're working for. To answer another one of your questions, I think if you're going to be, let's say you're starting from scratch and you're a zero in all skill sets, right? You don't know anything. I would strongly suggest Excel being your first skill to get to a five. Let's just call five like, what are we going to call five? Basic. Enough to be dangerous, maybe.
right.
I would definitely say Excel for sure. I know that sounds counterintuitive with everything about machine learning and AI. And then I would go to SQL. I think those are the two skills that you will need to have no matter where you go. Some places you may go and you may have your first or second job. They may not have Python ready and available for you. You may be the one data person that knows how to do a pivot table, as silly as it sounds. You may be the only person that knows how to do joins. So I would work on, and maybe to even go further on that, even if you do go to a company that has a big tech stack, let's say they have their data warehouse is, you know, close to perfect, and they have Databricks available, and there's a whole data science team and data engineering team, you will still need to probably build reporting in Excel because your stakeholders go, I need it this way. And so you have to tweak it. And then the guys or anyone in leadership is going to need to be able to look at it, and they can only open it in Excel. And then they're going to have issues, you know, along their journey in data acquisition through their dashboards and whatnot. So you're still going to need SQL and Excel no matter where you go. So I would invest heavily into those two things first before you do anything else.
Everyone listening, you hear that? Excel is still a thing. I'm just saying that. That's helpful to know. And it's easy to joke about it. And Biagio, I'm going to let you jump in because I know have opinions on that. Like I can hear you screaming. but at one point I want to put out, and Tyler, I'm happy you're kind of touching on that, because I feel like in our world, a lot of things move really quickly. And there gets to be a point in mind that like you missed the bus, or it's gone too far, or you can't catch up, because we as humanity have so much knowledge, and like analytics feels that way. Like I've talked to students and they're like, I don't know if I should go into this. And like, you know, maybe they're a little bit older, maybe they've had a career, or they're thinking about switching into it. And it seems like, well, if I'm not going to be a PhD level mathematician working for Google, unlocking quantum mechanics, like I can't go into to this one. And Tyler, you saying, hey, Excel is still really helpful. I hope maybe that just opens up some doors for some people listening. But Biagio, go right ahead.
No, there are so many things. I really enjoyed the conversation so far. And funny enough, Tyler mentioned SQL, and SQL was the class I was being a TA at. And Tyler was in for my advisor, Gabe Piccoli, back at LSU in that MSA Master of Analytics that he took. So that's kind of how I know Tyler, and I kind of follow his career. And he shared a post on LinkedIn that was super interesting to me. But one thing at a time. So I think a couple of things that I wanted to share my perspective. I want to see what Tyler thinks about them. So on Russ' question about, can you be like zero in visualization and then do advanced modeling? Again, that might be my perspective and my opinion, and you can disagree with it. But I do believe that before you get to any type of modeling, you need to be able to understand your data through manipulation and visualization. If you are zero in them, you have a you don't have a good knowledge of how your data are structured, what each column represents, and what are relationship and patterns they can easily identify with charts, I think that's very hard to build model that even makes sense sometimes. And to me, it's like, if you are zero, it's not good. I'm not saying you should be the best at visualizing the data, but I think you need to be good enough to fill your initial curiosity about your data and fill yourself with the understanding before moving to any more advanced stuff, like any type of modeling. That's, again, my take. I would love to hear your perspective on it. And there are a few other things I'm itching to talk about, but let's start with this one.
I would agree that if you're going to do one or the other in a proper order, that you should learn how to do data wrangling, pre-processing, joins, make it into make your ugly data more beautiful to be able to visualize from. I have seen people that are experts at forecasting and don't know how to, you know, if the data isn't in the proper format in the original spot, they get a little lost. I've seen data scientists build lots of different models from, you know, decision trees or logistic regression. But if the data isn't already in a nice, tidy format, they're not able to do much. So I have seen people in the workforce that do have the skill set that you're mentioning, but I would agree with you wholeheartedly that if you have to make a choice on where to start, you have to start on how do I make the data in the proper format to where I can leverage each skill properly. So I would wholeheartedly agree.
And I think it comes in play also the other message that you share, like, because you can go to a company where knowing Excel is all you need, that you might be the best by just be able to do VLOOKUP and pivot tables, right? So there is a wide range of company, and while data is the new money, we've been saying it for years, there is still like a lot of company that don't fully leverage the data and transform them into insight and information, because there are two different things, right? So I would agree with you that if you go to a company where there is a big team and there are a lot of data engineers that prepare your data for you in a way that like they are ready to go for the model, maybe in those cases, like you don't need to be a five, but you can really go on to like focusing on the modeling part. But majority of the company don't have all, no, I wouldn't say majority of the company, but it's rare that you have, and they also need to trust them to do all the job right, right? So I never do that. Every time I get a new data set, I always want to explore on my own, understanding it very well, and then start the process of modeling and pick the right, even thinking about the right model and stuff like that. I think it's a consequence of how well I know the data and what seems interesting about them, at least for me. I agree. I think as a university, we should not rush into telling students, you are a freshman, let's start Python or R from your first year, or a sophomore, start doing that. Maybe once you are good at mastering Excel and SQL, then it's time to level up, just because how much more you can do with them. But if you don't have the basic, if you don't know those tools very well, then you are in trouble, because there is still so much done with them.
And I would add on that, like, if you're even struggling on what to choose, like if you want to already be an expert, choose the stuff that you're going to enjoy doing, because I think it's just a gamble to say if whatever you're wanting to be an expert at, let's say, this is probably a logical fallacy, but it's probably not going to go away. But let's say you pick something that gets deprecated. You might be frustrated, but at least you learned a new skill along the way. And I guarantee you, if you're going to be in this industry for a long time, you're going to keep learning, right? Back in the day, we used to have, you know, everybody was on SAS and that's what you had. That's what you learned. You learned SAS. There was little R, if at all, any Python. And now it's mostly Python and a little bit of R. So whatever you choose to learn, you're going to have to keep learning as you move forward. It's not, I chose my specialty, I'm done. That's just never that way. You're going to come across lots of different business problems along the way where you're going to have to keep adding to your skill set. So don't get stuck in the, I need to choose and that's my spot forever.
I also like what you said, because it's kind of like conveyed the message that in the end of the day, these are tools and they will face the time, eventually. Because again, you're right. I think we have so many courses of SaaS and SPSS and everybody was going crazy with them. And now they're like, don't call me out, but I consider them dinosaurs. I'm so glad I can stay away from
teaching. They're dinosaurs and they're expensive.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. But then, the other kind of like, want to get your opinion on is because I'm a big advocate about R. And again, one of the reasons I invited you was the fact that while I know that you probably have to use Python for your job, in your free time when you're doing your little project, like the fun while you were doing for your kids, you're using R and ggplot and the magic Tidyverse package, which I love so much and I teach in my classes. But what I try to get here is that I think that, you know, at this point we are in a stage where there are these two open source coding, like Python versus R is a thing of the past, in my opinion, given that POSIT is not anymore R Studio and, you know, they're trying to merge and still idea good positive of each one of them. But I think the message is, if those are tools, I think it's important that the student get exposed to both, and then they decide which one is clicking the best, which one is easier to use. Because to be honest, unless you are going to, you know, super advanced building algorithm or developer roles, I think I can do pretty much everything in R that I can do in Python. I want to be honest with you. And I'm a big R guy, and I might be biased into this, but I think it's true. I think I can do tidyverse, tidy models, and pretty much do the whole data scientist position covered. But then again, what is the message? The message is go with the one that click the most for you, that works the easiest, that you are curious about of using. And I tell my student, get your hands dirty, pick a data set that you love, and start exploring and going beyond what we do in class, because that's kind of like the way you are mastering the tools.
It's definitely pick the one that you enjoy the most, because it's going to be frustrating along the way learning mm-hmm. a new skill set. And I don't know if we're going to have a good conversation on this, because I'm also a big R fanatic. I love R so much. All of my projects online, I do projects with, you know, football data. I do it with, different kinds of, open source data sets. So I could go on and on about all the stuff I've put on my GitHub that's been fun, from baseball to a kids show called Bluey. Like, I'm building all this in R because I really enjoy the tidyverse and the syntax. And I would also agree that I can do anything, you know, whatever Python can do, R can do as well. So, but I would say that you should learn both, because I think whenever you get into the workforce, you're not going to be able to always choose what you write in. And also, you're going to be taking over legacy code. And what I mean by that is there's going to be code that you're going to have to take over from someone who used to work at the company or has moved on to a different department or got a promotion, and now it's your code. And it may be Python, it may be R, it may be something completely different. So there may be times where you have to learn something you're not as comfortable with because you're taking over someone else's old project. So there's always that dynamic as well.
That's a great point. I actually, I think that's super important. I want to be honest with you. I think it's going to be a great conversation because you are our lovers. Because many, and we're missing one host. He's a big Python guy, so it would have been even better. But I think again, the key point here is that you should learn both, and you should get them to a level where you are comfortable using them, not that you are an expert in both. Because as you said, there might be some situation where you need to go more in one direction than the other. But to me, the key is understanding. I think one of the main reasons I like R over Python is the syntax, especially with Tidyverse. I learned base R and it wasn't as good as Tidyverse. It's almost like writing English with a pipe left to right, top to bottom. It's very intuitive. So that's why I get my preference there. But I think the key, I'm trying to see the beginning of every semester, just because so many in my university, I'm not pointing to people, love Python, is looking at the market, right? So I'm looking at posts about data analysts and data scientists only, because that's kind of like the focus on my predictive modeling classes. And when I look at the big company or like those announcements, a lot of them more than ever before are now putting Python or R. That's what I'm seeing. Now, I agree with you. I think legacy matters, and probably there is more Python than R in many companies. I absolutely agree. But it seems because they put one or the other, literally, it means that they are open. If you are really good in one of the two, right? If you are really good in one of the two, they are open in your ability to make and get work done. Let's put it that way. And then you might agree or disagree. And again, that's where your experience with across multiple industry and company come into play. And that's why I'm sure my student listen to what you say 10 times more focused than when I say those things in class. But that's what I'm feeling when I look at those job posting. And I don't know. I leave it as an open conversation, to be honest, not really a question.
Yeah, I think you're on the mark there. I've been trying to figure out where this shift came from, because originally it was, you know, SAS or R, and then it was like R or SAS, you know, SAS being the secondary. And then Python came around, started coming around maybe like 2013, it felt like. I started to wonder like where this was coming from. This is completely all conjecture, but I think the software engineering field started to become more saturated at that point, and they were struggling to compete for positions as a software engineer. And so they would pivot to data science and analytics, and they didn't know R in their tech stack, and they knew Python. And so I think that's where the Python migration, if you will, came from. Because R is built for data science. It is built for analytics. Python is not built for data science or analytics. Yeah. Specifically, there are packages in Python that allow us to do analytics or data science, but R, that's all it is. It's specially built for it. So this is not an RStudio commercial, but I really enjoy the R syntax so much more from an analytics, and maybe it's my mathematical brain. I did get my undergraduate in mathematics, and so I've talked to a few other folks that are more computer science-y, but it just could be whatever's most familiar to us that we enjoy coding in the most.
The other point I have, I'll shut up, I promise this is the last one. The only other point I have on the Python success is I agree with you. I mean, R is built by statisticians. So when people tell me, oh, you cannot do modeling with R, I just laugh so hard and I move on. But I'm serious. So I really
same here. Yeah.
it's not nice and polite. But the other thing that Python is really good at is versatility, right? So again, if you want to be in the whole full spectrum of it and become developer or, you know, again, building stuff a little bit out of, not for data scientists and data analysts, in my opinion, a machine learning engineer and stuff like that, maybe there is an edge just because of how many more people use that tool in that space. If you look at how many, you know, repository on GitHub or Python over R in those domains is not competition. So I'm not saying, hey, let's forget about Python, let's only teach R, but I'm just saying, hey, I think we are missing out, because especially those that want to be data scientists or data analysts, I think they need to be at least exposed with a class or two on R as much as they get exposed to three or four with Python. And,
I would agree.
And I'll stop here. Sorry, Ross.
Nothing to apologize for, because the question I'm going to ask is completely unimportant in any way. But Tyler, what do you do analytics wise with Bluey? Like, what, how would you, got to tell me more about that?
Yeah, of course. I try to, we were talking about sharpening skill sets before. I haven't done much like text analytics, and it's kind of been in the back of my brain that I should learn a little bit behind it. And so I'm like, okay, what data set can I use for, you know, trying to build a word cloud or word frequency or sentiment analysis? And so I've got three kids myself. They are all under the age of five. I've got even a 7-month-old. So we watch a lot of Bluey in the household. I highly recommend it, even if you don't have kids. I found that the script isn't in a nice tidy format anywhere. I searched Google for over 15 minutes trying to figure out if I could find the script like in a data set, but I found a wiki page that had the script in a pretty weird syntax, and each episode was a little different. So I thought to myself, well, maybe I can scrape this from the web and then put it into a tidy format that anyone else could use. And so that was my first project, to scrape the wiki page for the scripts for each episode of Bluey, find out which characters are more positive than others. Maybe it depends on the episode or the season. What words do they say to each other the most? All sorts of different things. So I was like, this is a perfect, you know, meld of my skill set, but also something that I'm passionate about, which is Bluey, because we watch it almost daily after dinner with the kids. And so it was a super fun project that I'm very familiar with on both sides.
That is absolutely awesome. When you want to like do a professional presentation, you want to go to a conference, I think this needs to be a journal, is really what I'm saying here. Biagio, make it happen. Okay.
No, I was about to say that was the post that captured my attention. I've been knowing Tyler for a while, and I should have invited me earlier, but that post kind of captured my attention. And that's what made me go, like, let me ask him if he want to join us. So that's, you know, not probably the one that everybody is thinking when he's thinking of data analytics, but I like that. And I want to ask you, is that the reason why is you're starting this project on text mining? Because you mentioned earlier that unsupervised technique are not something that you've been find successful in selling to customers to use. Is that like text mining one of those that you're thinking they can add the value? Just curious, because I've been doing a good bit of it, and I think it's very useful, and there is so much text data out there that, and so many technique that you can use in an unsupervised way for get some information out of that.
Yeah, I think that was part of it. I think it was part of it for sure. I had just never done it before. And out of all the places I've worked at, they do have one thing in common. It's survey data. And I think a lot of companies have some sort of survey, but sometimes they don't set it up right. Or, you know, they have a small team and they're not, you know, they're just trying their best to go on to SurveyMonkey and put something together so they can gain customer feedback or whatever you're looking for in that survey. And so in the survey, there is inevitably going to be an open kind of like, put all the text you want into this field, right? And that's really hard to analyze without parsing out each word and what it means. So with sentiment analysis, you could take that free form text, split each word out into a row and assign a value to that through a dictionary. So you can aggregate that that number, like a positive number of 3 for great or a -5 for terrible. And then you can aggregate that from a, you know, average standpoint and see, hey, are we getting better feedback in the month of February or is it better than January? And you can get a little bit of analytics just from that freeform text. So what looked like it was, you know, completely bogus data, you're like, I can't do anything with this. You can turn it into something a little bit more valuable, which is always fun to do.
I did a lot of work with online reviews for companies across, you know, from from search engine companies that have reviews from products to hotels to restaurants. And I was doing a lot of topic modeling of both unsupervised and weekly supervised. And there is so much data out there. There is unstructured text and people don't know what to do, but there is so much value if you can extract sentiment or topics or, you know, what people are talking about, in what way they're talking about the different elements. So that would be my suggestion. And it seems you are already in the right spot, so you don't need my suggestion.
Well, Tyler, as we're, you know, exploring all of the different ways, and I know it's easy to kind of, you know, chuckle about Bluey and do that, but you're doing real analysis on an open-ended question. So for you, without going into like real heavy detail within your current position, how do you approach something that may come from leadership that is very open-ended, something along the lines of, hey, let's make more money, let's make our customers happier, how, like these very broad level ones where kind of like we all know it, but how do you then approach something that is very broad, very open-ended, and how do you systematically approach that?
Yeah, that's a great question. In my experience, those open-ended questions come from the very top, like the C-suite executives. Mm-hmm. I think if you can find out which department that pain point is coming from, let's make it up. Let's just say it's in marketing. Then I would talk to the head of marketing, and then I would talk to the people that are on the ground. Normally, pain points don't get, let me say it this way. Normally C-suite folks don't find the pain points. They get they get told by all of their direct reports, right? And so it's probably somebody on the ground in marketing that found it. So I need to talk to that person to say, hey, what are the specifics? What are we looking for? Tell me what you're looking to achieve. Is it, and then I ask two questions. Is it actionable? Like, let's say we find a solution and I make up a solution. Can we do that? And they're like, yeah, we can do that. Okay. And then the next question I ask is it valuable? Like, if we're able to do this, does it provide value for the company? And if it's actionable and valuable, then we can move forward. I'm not going to do something if it doesn't provide value. And I can't provide value if we can't actually make it happen. So I got to make sure I have those two conditions in place with my stakeholders in marketing before we can start moving forward. Once I've talked to those people in marketing, I move myself back up, kind of discussing all the way back up to the top to see if it was even an issue in the first place, because sometimes you have false alarms, but then we kind of start from there. Once I get alignment from top to bottom, then we can start putting a more analytical approach and lens to it as we move away from trying to figure out where the problem is to, okay, now how do we solve with certain techniques, if you will. So that's kind of my approach.
So Tyler, real fast, you just said a lot. And as someone who is in analytics and what we brought on and has a great vast experience and all of those things and those trainings, you said a lot of words. And then the analytics part was literally the very, very end of like, and then we do the thing.
thing at the very end. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So I find it interesting that everything else you talked about before that was still those human relations skills, that project management, that communication, those softer skills that stereotypically sometimes people that go into computer science, engineering, like they don't necessarily want to be doing those things. And what I'm hearing is that is still an essential part of that job. Like, you're going to do this if you're going to be good at this job.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no avoiding it. And I do think it is a bit undervalued in a lot of the boot camps I see. I've been seeing boot camps for over a decade now, and I'm not suggesting that this should be the case, but I do feel like we are missing or maybe undervaluing or not thinking about the soft skills that are important, because in two fashions, in the way that you work with people, you still need people skills. And then also, once you get to the technical part and you deliver your solution, you need to be able to communicate that properly, or else all of the work that you've done for the past week, month, days, or however long it's been goes to waste. And what's a worse feeling than spending all this time and effort to provide value and then it's not actually seen or affirmed by the people leveraging it, right? So it can be really frustrating. So to avoid that, you do have to build those relationships and the trust early on so that you can become a partner with all of your cross-functional people from marketing to finance to supply chain. You could go on and on and on. Even HR needs analytics sometimes. So
right.
It's super important.
Do you find yourself in a situation where like you may have a solution and you know it solves it, but when you present that or you try and implement it across the company, the organization, it is not received in the way that you were expecting? And then Biagio, I'm sorry for cutting off if you want to jump in.
All good.
Yeah, it'll happen. It is inevitable. And it will be frustrating, but how you can get around, I shouldn't say how you can get around it. You can mitigate the risk by getting buy-in from partners that are cross-functional. So, marketing and finance are tied together because marketing likes to spend money and finance kind of controls that money. So they need to be lock and step together, but they aren't always. So as you start building out your version 1.0 of your solution, bring in folks from the outside to get perspective on anything that they might see on how to improve it or what they would like, and kind of start expanding before you get to the very top so that you can get buy-in from lots of different partners across the organization so that when you do present it at the very top level, you are at least maximizing your potential to get complete buy-in, right? So I'm not going to preach and say there's a way to avoid it entirely because we're all human and there's always miscommunication errors, but you can always try and mitigate to get cross-functional buy-in from everyone across the board if they're involved or even if they aren't involved, because it's always good to get that. How do I say this? We're the ones that are coding. We are the ones that are building it. And sometimes we get stuck in the, I've got my heads down in the basement, I'm coding all day long. And then you go, oh yeah, there's this thing. And then you have those moments, oh yeah, there's this thing. But you can avoid spending all that time by just talking to more people across the company, then they can get you unstuck out of that quote unquote tunnel vision of building out a analytical product. Because you have those two sides, right? You have to build out the analytical part, but you also have to have the skills that marketing and sales have to, for lack of a better term, sell your solution. Because that's what you really have to do. You have to sell it to them. You have to explain it to them. So we really have our work cut out for us in the data science industry to have the technical skill set, but also the soft skills as well. Not many sectors of in the job place require both both soft and hard skills to be at least a 7 out of 10 in order to be productive. So right. We definitely have our work cut out for us.
Wow, Biagio, you were saying?
I wanted to say that again. Listeners by now know that our podcast is now staged. We don't have preemptive question or stuff like that. And the conversation just naturally gets to any points that we don't plan, right? But to me, this is what Tyler is saying is exactly the value of taking a master in analytics from an information system department, specifically out of a business school. Again, in my mind, information system is bridging the gap between management people that make decision and technical people, because we do have the hybrid of the both world, right? We have the technical skills to understand the code and write the code on our own, but we also have the soft skills or the managerial skills to understand the problem. As Tyler was saying, he's not even thinking about writing the code unless he understands it. It adds value to the project and is feasible, right? That's key. I can guarantee you that that's not something that comes natural to somebody that codes the entire. I'm not judging them. I love them, and I'm kind of a geek on my own. But on a black screen, thinking about the accuracy of a model the entire day and just make it better, that's not the first thing you are thinking in mind, right? You're just going for it and develop algorithm and whatever it comes with. And that is awesome. But I want to bring it to the next level. And I think, and I want to know again, I kind of think I suffer from imposter syndrome. And at the same time, because I'm a college professor, I think I have such an important role in, you know, giving the future workforce the right skills. So I always want to validate with guests. They are in the industry. They are experts on a topic that I teach. Kind of like if my opinion, if what I'm thinking when I go and preparing those classes and materials make sense. But correct me if I'm wrong, Tyler. I think even more than before, those soft skills for somebody in those positions matter because of AI, right? And because of how now even some people that were not a 7 out of 10 can get to the 7 out of 10, but then they, maybe they have a 7 out of 10 on the soft skills. And instead of a pure coder might have a 10 out of 10, but they have a 3 out of 10. And is AI, I'm not sure it's going to get them to 7 or to 5. Again, that's my take. I don't want to always talk about AI, but yeah, what do you think about it?
I think AI, I'm on both sides of it, right? Because I feel like if you want to, for example, you have Python code, you want to move it to R, ChatGPT can be a great partner in helping you convert stuff over. But at the same time, I feel like it can be a bit of a crutch to learn stuff unless you type it with your hands. So from a coding standpoint, it's kind of a double-edged sword. AI from a how we build it standpoint, that umbrella is so big. I challenge anyone to ask 100 people for the definition of what AI is. You're going to get 100 different answers. And so I feel like sometimes we talk past each other when it comes to AI. But when it comes to that hard skill or soft skill, I guess let me propose a question to you. Is that whenever you have a, let's say, a linear regression model, should you ever say the term R squared to your marketing or finance partners? I would say the answer should be no. And I don't think that's a soft skill nor hard skill. It's both. You need to know that the people that you're working with don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. But at the same time, you have to, you know, well, what is R squared? I don't even know what they would think it would be. They're probably just completely blanking in their mind what that means. But you can use your hard skills, say, oh, I know what that is, and explain it to me like I'm a 10-year-old kind of way, where you can say, oh, you know, it's a it tells us how good the model is. And, you know, I'm oversimplifying, but that, you know, if you ever need to bring up the term R squared with any of your stakeholders, you have to be able to communicate it in a way that they can understand. So I think there's a strange mix. I don't know what we would call recognizing that we don't overcomplicate things, but then also explain complicated things in a very simple to understand way without oversimplifying. It's something that I still struggle with. I'm like, do I bring them along the journey so that they can understand with me? Or do they just go, I don't care about any of that. Just tell me how, you know, X, Y, and Z. But then you get to the point where you tell them that, but they may not understand the nuances or, you know, downsides or upsides to what you're talking about. So it's a very delicate dance depending on who you're talking to, which is where the soft skills come in. Who am I talking to? What do they know? What's their expertise? What are they looking for?
Yeah. And I think that's why I was making the point about the soft skills to be the one that AI, I don't know if it brings them to you unless you are like asking ChatGPT during a meeting, how should I, you know what I'm saying, reply to this question, right? That's kind of like where I was going with it. I think it's difficult to find the balance. I do think that reporting those values can be any type of metrics, RMSE, MAE, whatever you're using, right? To kind of validate, provide transparency. I think it's important to have them, but I agree with you. It's difficult to make them tangible, what they mean and why they are important, or what is the nuance that they bring compared to whatever it was used before. But that's a soft skills that you have to have, soft skills that you have when you interface with other humans, not when you interface with ChatGPT.
Yeah, exactly. I completely agree.
Yeah, that's probably, that's what I I was thinking with that. Maybe I asked the question the wrong way, but that's where I was going with it.
Russ,
should we ask the standard question about if you have an advice for our student, which is the majority of our listener?
And right.
For those that are like approaching this field, what would be your advice, or you had something else in mind? I don't want.
No, that was it. I was gonna wrap up with that one. Yagio's reading my mind, you know. So like, yeah, any general advice, and it doesn't have to be specific analytics. Just kind of looking back at where you've been, someone who's kind of been out there for a little bit. For those that might be graduating in just a couple of weeks here, or maybe at the beginning of their college journey, like what would you like to kind of pass on that maybe someone can learn from?
Oh, I feel like I've said a lot already. I don't want to say the multiple things over and over again. You know, I think myself coming out of the master's program, I may have underestimated my skills and overestimated them at the same time. I think going into the workforce, I overestimated how many people were really good at analytics. And I think just because what we see on social media, even the posts that I make, I don't make a lot, but when I do, people are like, wow, that's amazing. I'm like, yeah, it was a lot of work, but it's not something I'm still not an expert at. So, I think when you're watching other people do, I don't know if your listeners are familiar with Tidy Tuesday, but it's a, you know, data set that we have every week that comes out, and you can do analytics with it, and it's super cool to share with everybody. I've done that with lots of different coworkers across the years, and I'm amazed at what they build, and I feel it makes me feel small again. But then when I build something, they're like, wow, that's amazing, right? And so just go into the workforce knowing that everybody is going to be have a different skill set than you, and just keep moving forward, right? The data science, the definition of data science has changed over the past decade. So you're going to have to keep moving with it. And so if you are a continual learner and you enjoy building new things, learning new skill sets, then you're in the right place for sure. One thing that I haven't mentioned before is that in order to separate yourself in the interview process, it can be a bit difficult because resumes kind of blend together. And I've looked over probably thousands of resumes over the past couple of years, and they can kind of just start to mush together. But what I try to look for is, what have you built on your own time, and where have you kind of struggled? If I can have a conversation with you about one of your pet projects and, you know, kind of connect with you on a personal level on the struggle of building something from nothing, finding out new insights no one would have ever known otherwise, then that's definitely a separator. Number two is experience. And I know a lot of people are probably, they go from undergrad straight to their graduate program and have no experience that is directly correlated or even adjacent to data in general. So one thing I do suggest is there's lots of different volunteer opportunities. One of them is called Catch a Fire. You can look them up, and they have lots of different opportunities where you can volunteer for nonprofit companies to say, hey, I'm looking for, I think I mentioned it before, they did a survey, but they don't know how to extract any data from it. Or there might be some manual work that you may have to do to, you know, extract data from PDFs. But once you do that, then you can do analytics on it. So there's lots of different ways you can volunteer your skills out there to put on your resume to say, hey, I've provided value for this company, even though I didn't, you know, have a W-2 assigned to it or anything. I think that's a good way to separate yourself in the interview process.
Tyler, I love that. And I like that last little bit of being able to potentially help out with some not-for-profit organizations while still improving your skills. That's a really valuable suggestion. And I hope you sense our gratitude and know that we value the time you spent here talking with us, because this was an awesome episode. And thank you so much for being here. And thank you for listening to another episode of The Gateway, brought to you by Northern Illinois University, where your future is our focus. And please
remember to love always the promise of tomorrow today.